Who's Doc?
As usual.
Ryan grinned at Christy, squeezing her fingers. Ever since the 36-year-old doctor had joined them, she and Doc Tanner had always teased each other. Mildred Winona Wyeth was born in December 1964, more than a century earlier. She had been one of the world's greatest authorities on the science of medical freezing, which turned ironic when she went into hospital for minor abdominal surgery in late December of the year 2000. Something had gone wrong with the operation, and to save her life, the doctors decided to freeze her. Only a few days later, the world exploded. The nuclear holocaust that had been feared for nearly 60 years finally happened. The heavens were blackened with missiles, at the time that was later to be called Skydark. Tens of millions died in the massive blasts of the first couple of days. Then came the predicted period of the long winters, with the insidious radiation killing off hundreds of millions of the survivors of the first strikes. And through all the endless years of bleakness, Mildred Wyeth slept dreamlessly on. Gradually, a form of civilization crept back to what had once been the United States of America, and what was now Deathlands. They were isolated communities called Vils, many with their own rulers, who named themselves Barons. It was a world of violence, ruled by the gun and the knife. A world where science and industry were almost gone. A world with virtually no airplanes and few motorized vehicles, adapted to run on crudely processed gasoline. A world with only rudimentary power, no television or telephones. Ryan and his friends had finally awakened Mildred from her long sleep, and she was now an integral member of their small group.
I don't remember feeling so well after a jump. Not ever.
Mildred's right hand reached down for the comfort of the butt of her ZKR 551 Czech target revolver. The six-shot revolver had been chambered to take a Smith & Wesson 38 caliber round. Mildred, other than being a specialist in cryogenics, had been a member of the U.S. pistol shooting team in the last ever Olympics in Atlanta in 1996. She was, quite simply, the finest shot that Ryan had ever seen.
Doc hasn't even got his usual nosebleed. And where in the name of Mary and Joseph did all the water go? Even my clothes are dust dry.
I don't know. Must have sort of drained away during the jump. Who knows?
All they knew was that in the last months before Skydark, the government had poured billions of dollars into what was memorably called an aggressive defense. The master plan was christened the Totality Concept, of which the Strategic Defense Initiative had been one small part. The Totality Concept included Operation Kronos, which was an ultra-secret research into time trawling, plucking people from their own past and dragging them helplessly forward into the militaristic present. Then there had been Over Project Whisper, and a crucial segment of this had been codenamed Cerberus, Matter Transfer. Highly secret installations had been buried deep within a number of military complexes, which were called redoubts. Most were built in the last 5 years of the previous century, many in isolated parts of national parks, to the pointless disgust of the conservationist lobby. Opposition to the siting of the many redoubts was ruthlessly crushed, with most of the leading protagonists mysteriously disappearing. But the system worked. You entered a gateway in Portland, Maine, for example, pressed in the code, and woke up sometime later in, say, Portland, Oregon. Ryan and his companions had stumbled on one of the gateways many months ago and triggered the start mechanism by simply closing the door. But they had no idea of how to control the system. As far as was known, all of the intricate coding instructions for the Matrans units had been destroyed during the Skydark and the long winters, which meant that you got into a gateway to make a jump from Portland, Maine, for example, and you might end up anywhere. Florida, Montana, Moscow, the Amazon jungle, Pocatello, bumfuck Egypt, anywhere. The five of them were up on their feet now, stretching, waiting for the sixth member of the group to lurch back out of the mind-crushing numbness of the jump. Dr. Theophilus Algernon Tanner was the only surviving subject trawled forward in time during Operation Kronos. He'd been born in the beautiful hamlet of South Stratford in Vermont on Valentine's Day in 1868. Highly intelligent, successful, traveled, and cultured, he had been married in June of 1891 to Emily Chandler. In the next 4 years, they had two adorable children, Rachel and little Joyen. In November 1896, Doc Tanner was trawled forward in time to 1998. During the next 2 years, he made himself intolerably awkward, constantly trying everything he could to return to his own time and to his wife and children, or to sabotage the detested Kronos operation. In the end, he became such a running sore, the Whitecoats got rid of him by pushing him forward nearly 100 years into Deathlands, where he met up with Ryan Cotter. It was an event that almost certainly saved the old man's life. The experiences of being trawled had toppled the balance of his fine brain, and he clung to sanity by ragged nails. Now he was generally in good mental health, though sometimes a few cogs failed to connect, and he would slip away for a few seconds. But he always came back. Doc was as tall as Ryan at 6'3", but as skinny as a lath. He had silvery hair, which hung to his shoulders, and wore an ancient frock coat, so old that it showed patches of dull green mold, though the garment was in slightly better condition than his cracked knee boots. His weapon of choice was a unique gold-plated commemorative Jeb Stuart 9-shot Lamar revolver, which also fired a single 18-gauge scattergun round. He also carried an ebony cane with a silver lion's head hilt that concealed a slender rapier of finest Toledo steel.
By the three Kennedys, what a fine jump that was. I'm ready now for any royster-doistering that you may care to mention, be it drinking snapdragons or jumping jointed stools.
Hi, Doc. Glad to see you're back with us.
I never really left, did I, my dear?
Doc looked around the chamber as he brushed at his clothes.
I have 2 comments to make on our location. Firstly, to point out that the color of the walls is by far the most hideous that I can remember. Like the agonizing feeling at the back of the eyes after a long night's drinking of porter at O'Flaherty's Irish Bar, down on the Tenderloin in Old Boston.
You said you had 2 comments, Doc?
Oh, yes. Indeed I have. Perhaps it's my failing memory, but I seem to recall that we commenced the jump while sitting neck-deep in floodwater. Does anyone have any suggestions where it might have gone?
We were just talking about that. And the answer, Doc, is that nobody has any idea. Somewhere in the middle of the jump, it just sort of vanished.
Well enough, John Barrymore. I shed no tears for its departure. There are a few things more unpleasant than walking around with wet underwear.
Guess you know about that, Doc.
Doc raised his cane at Mildred.
Aren't they, rump-fed Runyon?
I would if I knew how.
If you two have finished, then I reckon we should think about moving out of here.
Ryan drew the Sig Sauer and examined it carefully.
Everyone on double rat as usual.
Suggest we all check blasters. All been soaked in the water, so it's better to test them.
Ryan reached out to the handle of the heavy door.
Right. Here we go.
He paused in the entrance, peering at the deep-set steel hinges.
Huh. Been properly oiled. Within the last few weeks, I'd say.
Think someone's been using the chamber?
Jack looked out into the anteroom.
Someone out there.
Ryan stepped out, aware immediately that the flavor of the air was different.
Not a redoubt smell.
Too fresh. Sort of an odd flavor to the air, like a mixture of town and country. Kind of a warm smell as well.
Swamp and desert. But not like any swamp or desert I ever knew.
I cannot notice anything at all unusual in the scent of the air.
On the table there. Look.
Most of the rooms adjoining gateways were stripped bare, though occasionally one might have a small chair or some shelves. This one had a rectangular table with bamboo legs and a glass top. On it was a crumpled silk scarf. Ryan picked it up and unfolded it, revealing a pattern of crimson flowers.
Chrysanthemums. That's beautiful.
Looks oddly oriental. Hand-printed design, I believe. What a lovely thing to leave in a gateway.
Table doesn't look American either. That looks maybe Japanese or Chinese.
A small seed of suspicion was growing fast at the back of Ryan's mind, growing and bursting into flower, an idea that might make a lot of sense of many of the things that had been happening in the previous weeks.
You feel anything, lover?
I can't feel anyone close, but You got the same idea as me, Ryan. I can see it in your face.
Can you let us all in?